You're listening to Policy Safari with Rose Jackson.
Hello, I'm Rose Jackson, and I'm a Labor member of New South Wales Parliament in the Legislative Council, which is like the upper house of the New South Wales Parliament. And welcome to my state politics podcast, Policy Safari. So it seems like everyone has a politics podcast now. Even Barnaby Joyce has one. So I have one too. And why should you stay tuned? Well, this is going to be a short, but hopefully pretty interesting delve into some of the issues that our state parliamentarians are dealing with that actually genuinely really matter. Now, I know hopefully interesting might be a stretch because not everyone is interested in politics, but you know what? Politics is interested in you. It affects everything we do, every way we interact in our daily lives. It's pervasive, and I reckon that's one of the reasons why sometimes it can kind of seem overwhelming or even boring. And state politics in particular is often seen as capital B boring. But it isn't. It's actually really important and really interesting. And I've called my podcast Policy Safari because we're going to be going out into the wilds of state politics and seeing what weird and amazing stuff is actually hiding out there. It's not always in plain sight in state politics. Sometimes you've got to dig a little bit, but if you hang out with this podcast, if you come with us on this little journey, we're going to venture out and I'm pretty confident we'll stumble upon some pretty cool stuff. This is not like a journalist or a commentator podcast. I am a politician and so I do have views about what should happen with policy. I'm kind of paid to have opinions on things like this. But that doesn't mean that this podcast is intended to shove my ideas down anyone else's throat. The idea of this podcast is that there are genuinely interesting ideas that are worth exploring. Policy challenges that we should be looking at and checking out if we can get some answers and giving some attention to the things that we can do about them. Now, you don't have to venture very far into the policy wilds these days to stumble over the issue of wage theft. Seems like you can't open a newspaper without some celebrity chef or major brand accused of it, or likely pleading guilty to it. Seems pretty widespread out there, words like crisis, epidemic being thrown around. But what actually is wage theft, and probably more importantly, what can we do about it? Our first little trip into state politics land in our open-air Jeep is going to try and uncover this wage theft issue a little bit. And let's start with Bella's story. Bella's a science student at UTS, and she talked about the experience that she and so many of her friends have had working in the hospitality industry. Bella, thanks for coming along. Why don't you just introduce yourself and just tell us a little bit about your story and what happened to you?
Okay, so my name is Bella. I'm a student at the moment studying science. And unfortunately, with being a student usually means working in hospitality. So I'd been looking from probably, I think it was early March until July before I found a stable position. I did a lot of free trials in that time.
Yeah. So again, like let's talk about that for a tick. So that's really common, is it? People say, oh, come in, do a shift, do a trial. They don't pay you, but you end up working for hours.
Yeah, 100%. Some of them are only like an hour and then others are like a 5 to 6 hour shift.
All unpaid.
Yeah. Yeah. They're supposed to be paid, but they're not. So,
And imagine trying to complain about that and then asking for the job.
Yeah, exactly. I think I did. I stopped counting after seven, but there were at least seven free trials. So that was painful. So finally, in July, I got offered another free trial at a cafe. And they gave me the job on the day. So I was quite excited because I thought, you know, even though I just did a free trial, at least I finally got a job out of one of them. Seemed all right. The boss seemed nice. There were quite a few other staff there. And then started getting a bit weird when I didn't get any pay for, I think it was 3 weeks.
And what were you meant to be getting paid? Was it meant to be weekly, fortnightly? Yep. So you were meant to be getting paid weekly.
Yeah. So about 2 weeks in, I asked him, So is it weekly, fortnightly? Just like, you know, trying to gauge when I was going to get paid. And he was like, oh, no, it's weekly, just a bit backed up this week or whatever. So I left it at that. Finally got a pay slip 3 weeks later. And it was $22 during the week and $24 on the weekend, which I knew was under minimum wage for what I was doing, but I thought, whatever, it'll do for now. I'm not afraid to speak up in my job. So I would come into, not in a rude way, and I would come in and I'd be like, oh, hey, like, so, you know, I was supposed to get paid on Friday for the last 2 weeks. Do you know when that's going to happen? And he would always lie and say, oh, I sent it last night. That's really weird. You should have it soon. And then the next time I'd see him, I'd be like, well, still hasn't come through. That's funny. And then he'd say, oh, sorry, forgot to send it. I'll do it tonight. So it was always just like, oh, okay, so you haven't paid me then.
So you've been working from July to September. You'd never been paid on time. Mm-hmm. You weren't being paid the right rate, although, as you said, to be honest, you just kind of parked that because you were happy to have a job.
Exactly.
And there were just always excuses about why you weren't getting paid on time, why things were late.
Yeah. And another reason why I kind of put up with the underpayment was because this was the only job of all the free trials I'd done that wasn't cash in hand.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was like, oh, you know, this is the non-dodgy one. It was about mid-October and he owed me 3 weeks pay and I was about to start my next week of shifts. And I hadn't got a pay slip or pay, because sometimes he would email me the pay slip but wouldn't actually transfer the money and all that kind of fun stuff, you know. So I reported to Fair Work. There was only one other person working there by this point. When we started, there was probably six or seven staff, and then there was only me and one other girl. So I told her that she should do the same.
Mm. And when you say reported, so you just went on their website?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Just went on the website. I followed through with it, but then I got a call in November saying that they contacted him and he's gone into administration, so there's nothing I can do about it.
Ba-bow.
Yeah. And they also worked out that he owed me over $1,400 in underpayment and in the missed paid.
Clarify, so you've never seen that money?
No. And I haven't heard from him either.
Yeah.
And I was... partly because I was angry and partly because I wanted my money, I was texting him every 2 days, I think it was, a thing of how much he owed me and just nothing.
So hearing Bella's story about just getting straight up ripped off really made me interested and curious about this issue of wage theft and kind of what we can do about it. And that led me to James from Victoria. James also got ripped off at work, and he decided that he was going to do something about it.
Well, I've worked in hospitality the whole time I've been employed, since I was about 15. When I first worked in hospitality, it was a local food place where I started off being paid $10 an hour, and then sort of moved up to like 12 and 14, but it was always cash in hand and all that sort of stuff. And then I moved across to another restaurant job where similarly it was kind of a flat rate with no penalty rates and cash in hand. And it wasn't actually until I moved to a restaurant that paid a ward and where I was treated properly that I realized just how kind of serious the issue was. And that made me really passionate to kind of show other people the difference that it makes when things are done properly and how important that is.
So James got passionate and he went and did something about it. And this is a really important point here because so many people who experience this kind of thing just go, there isn't anything that I can do. The problem is too big. It's too widespread. But James explains how there is stuff that individuals can do when confronting the issue of wage theft.
What I'd really noticed, sort of not even consciously at the time, but on reflection, is just how sort of irrelevant the fact of what was being done at those previous workplaces was illegal and how it felt as though there wasn't really any way to change or challenge that. So, you know, that means that these institutions we have in place, like Fair Work, aren't working effectively for vulnerable, in my case, young workers.
Yeah,
and so then my next sort of the logical conclusion I came to was that the only sort of option and the only effective organisation that could help in those situations was the union. Hospital Voice is the hospitality union based in Victoria. It's an organisation of hospital workers run kind of for its members that's aimed at making the industry more equitable and better to work in for longer periods of time.
Cool. Yeah. Okay, so you got engaged with your union, with Hospo Voice, and yeah. what happened from there?
Well, I started going along to meetings and leaders' meetings, and then started doing some volunteering initially, talking to other hospitality workers who had got involved in some of the petitions and things like that that Hospo Voice regularly circulates. So I started doing some kind of organising conversations. And then I started doing some volunteer organising around my my suburb in Footscray and the western suburbs. So trying to talk to and organise other Hospo Voice workers from that area. And then more broadly, I've been involved in the actions that Hospo Voice has done against a series of, you know, really big, really cashed up bars in Chapel Street. And we've recently been really heavily involved in the Columbaris wage theft scandal. You know, we've gone after places like Dinner by Heston. So, you know, sort of as soon as I started volunteering with and spending some time around Hospo Voice, I kind of found myself involved in all these really empowering actions.
And what's amazing is this stuff is actually working. It's challenging and changing the deep cultural issues in the hospitality industry about how important it is to pay your staff properly and that there are real consequences if you don't. Okay, now it's important to acknowledge that even a dedicated activist like James, who is doing great stuff with fellow hospitality workers on the ground, recognises that this isn't enough, that we actually need our politicians to get involved if we're really going to change the game on wage theft and start getting people, particularly young people, paid properly. And you know what? Some of our politicians are actually listening. Really, they are. Now, we're getting deep in the weeds here on our policy safari on wage theft because we're going to bring in one of my Labor colleagues in the New South Wales Parliament, also from the New South Wales Legislative Council. Remember, Upper House, New South Wales Parliament. Stay with me here. This is Labor Shadow Minister for Finance, Daniel Mookie. So, Daniel, do you just want to give us a little bit of an insight into some of the work that you've been doing, kind of exposing how rampant wage theft is?
Yeah. Well, obviously, thank you for having me onto your podcast.
Thank you for coming.
Look, I got fired up about the issue, like a lot of people did when you read about what was going on with 7-Eleven. And you start reading about how systemic it's become among certain parts of the economy, and you think that maybe it's just one company that's done this as their business model in response to pretty tough competitive conditions. But I started to meet with some of those people who were involved, and a lot of them were from the subcontinental community from which I'm also from. And you start to realise that, well, actually, there's a lot of people making a lot of profit off this. And that kind of led me to kind of ask the basic question as well, what could a state government be doing about this? And really, it comes down to two things. Firstly, we do control the country's criminal laws. So if anybody wants to say that if you deliberately steal someone's wages and that person should go to jail, well, that requires a state government to pass a law.
And just on that, I mean, I think one of the interesting contrasts that you've drawn in relation to wage theft as a criminal act is if a worker was taking money out of the till and how that stealing from the employer is treated quite differently from the employer stealing money that is owed to the worker.
Well, see, if I was to walk into a shop right now and pickpocket a worker, I would have to explain myself to the police and the courts. But if an employer was to do that, well, they don't have to explain it to anyone. And that's a gap. It's a real gap in our criminal law. I mean, our criminal law says the type of behaviours we wish to reward and the type of behaviours we wish to punish. And my view is if you steal someone's wages, if you steal how they the labour that they've committed to a task and the pay that they therefore deserve, then that's no different to pickpocketing someone, and you should also face criminal sanction. So that's been the first thing that sort of I've been pushing, and Labor's been pushing, and been pushing consistently. New South Wales Labor's been pushing consistently now for 4 odd years. We were the first party in the country to say that you should face jail time if you are systemically stealing people's wages. That's the first thing which I think state governments can do. But the second thing, of course, is we are responsible for payroll tax, which people forget. So we have a system in New South Wales.
Okay, pause. What is payroll tax? You're going to have to unpack this for people.
So every employer who employs worth more than, at this point, I think it's about $750,000, although that's probably changed in July. But if you spend more than $750,000 a year on wages, then you have to pay a tax to the state government. And the state government collects about $9 billion each year off this tax. And that tax is paid by businesses, big and small. You can have a couple of small businesses that employ a couple of people and pay over, you know, close to $750,000 to a million to the big Woolworths of the world, the biggest retailers. And they all have to pay the payroll tax. And that's not too dissimilar to having to pay corporate tax or the other taxes at a federal level. But at a state level, it's crucial to our budget. But it obviously does turn on how much you're paying on wages. So quite clearly, if you're underpaying your workers and if you're taking their wages, if you're not paying them what they're legally owed, you're also actually technically breaching the New South Wales tax laws.
So payroll tax is a tax that is explicitly paid on the money that you pay to your employees.
Yeah.
That's how it's calculated.
Yeah.
And so if you're not paying the right amount to your employees, it's almost certain that you're not paying the correct payroll tax. Is that a fair proposition?
Yeah, because it's not like you're likely to tell one authority the truth and another a lie. Like, if you're lying to one authority, you're probably lying to more of them. So it's not an unreasonable sort of presumption that if you haven't paid your employees properly, you probably haven't told the tax office just how much you are paying and therefore how much tax you should be paying. So I've just been making the point that every time anybody steals someone's wages, they're actually committing three crimes. They're committing a crime against their employee and their staff member for sure. They're committing a crime against every other business that's actually following the law. Like, they're getting a substantial competitive advantage in the marketplace. They can trade their goods a lot cheaper. They can try to undercut people on price. So they're robbing the sort of small businesses that are sitting around the corner from them. But they're also robbing the taxpayer of the monies that would otherwise be owed. So what I've been doing and what we've been doing as a Labor Party has been using whatever power we have within the parliament to scream blue murder about why it's just so important that the New South Wales Revenue Office, Revenue New South Wales, actually take wage theft seriously.
Criminalising wage theft is one way we can try and use the power of government to stop the epidemic of worker underpayment, but there are other things our parliaments can and should be doing.
And like, when we were doing it, we were kind of being laughed at a bit, you know, it's a minor angle in the debate, until people realised that, like, well, we're talking about annually $6 billion worth of wages being theft, which means quite a lot of tax is not being paid on that. And it means also that state government's not getting enough money for people's schools and hospitals. So we have been leading the charge pretty aggressively in the upper house to try to shame this government into doing their job, which
is... And what's been the response? Because I can certainly attest to people that Daniel has been screaming blue murder about this and really has been raising it pretty consistently in the parliament. But what's been the response from the government to your advocacy on this point?
Well, I might have inadvertently triggered a constitutional showdown, actually, because we're trying to use the powers, the Legislative Council's most aggressive power, which is the ability to ask for government documents. So we asked the government to just tell us and provide all the documents they have that show that they're actually investigating every company that has been accused of wage theft in a proper way.
Just to pause on that, what are they saying that they are doing in these investigations? What are they claiming that they're doing?
They're saying that they make a judgment as to when they think they should be doing it, and whenever they think they should be doing it, they're doing it.
We have no more information than that.
No more information.
Right, okay. So you're trying to get that information about what actually is being investigated and what those investigations are revealing.
Yeah, yeah. And incidentally, how much tax are they actually collected? Which is ultimately where this all ends. Like, are they actually going after these companies? Have they actually collected even a single dollar from any of these companies?
We don't know that. We have no...
Absolutely no idea. Yeah. And they're not prepared to say a word about it. And they keep saying that they care more about the privacy of these companies than they do necessarily in providing the public with the information the public wants, or for that matter, even satisfying the parliament that they're doing their job.
So I guess I wanted to make this podcast because I feel like the work that we do, particularly in state parliament, isn't really seen as particularly interesting or sexy. And some of the policy issues that we're dealing with are really challenging and complicated. Wage theft is like that. It's something that is so widespread, so pervasive, it's easy for people, particularly young people, to feel like there isn't anything that they can do to change it. And I find that sense of futility about the bad stuff in our lives and in our community really toxic and harmful. Partly because it's not true. There are things that we can and are doing. So if you're listening, and thanks for listening, by the way, if you're listening and you're someone who's experiencing wage theft and feeling like you want to be more active in making things better, then get involved. James from Hospo Voice again.
So I would say get on board with your union, be that Hospo Voice, be that RAPWOO. We've got these awesome groups of young workers who are all coming together to collectivise and to push for a better industry. And that's such an empowering experience to have as a young person, because it shows you that actually there is a way that you can advocate for your rights, but there's no way that you can do that by yourself. And I think unionism as a young person really puts you in an empowered place going forward as a worker and as a person in the future. I think it actually means you're much more likely to be able to better advocate in any kind of employment that you have throughout your life. So I would definitely say that, yeah, unions are the thing to get on board with. And yeah, don't be, obviously it's easy to get really dejected and down if all you've known and all you've experienced and all the people around you have experienced of a similar age is that kind of mistreatment. But if you look around at what's been happening recently with young people organising and saying enough, then there is another way.
So that's it for episode one. Thank you for listening, and thank you to Bella, James and Daniel for talking to me. And thank you to Jesse Chard from Ritual Studios for pulling this all together. We plan on going on about half a dozen of these little policy safaris this year. So if you like the idea and think that there are other things in New South Wales politics that you want to know more about, get in touch and let us know. We'll speak to you again real soon. See you on our next policy safari. Bye for now.